This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, you're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn Mark and Roshan Kanison. It is 6 o'clock in the morning, Thursday the 11th of February, and it is the last day of the week before the Chinese New Year holiday. What are your plans this weekend, Roshan?
I have no plans this weekend except, no exception to the plan. Spend some time with my sister who is going back at the end of next week all the way to the Alps. No, she's not going back to the Alps. She's going back to Switzerland. But other than that, nothing much really. Mm. I may see what's happening in the outside world now that the restaurants are dining to two people a table and industries are open a bit. But that really depends on my appetite, I guess, on like how adventurous I want to be this weekend. Otherwise, I may just sit at home and do nothing.
That does sound nice, admittedly.
So, I'm lying though. There will be work, but we'll see.
Yes, no, I have lots of reading planned because Chinese New Year, lots of reading, lots of eating, possibly some playing mahjong with members of my family who are within the 15-kilometer radius, which is not hard considering most of us live quite close to each other. So it's going to be likely an exciting weekend. But before we get there, we have a bunch of things planned for you guys this morning. What are we talking about?
A whole bunch of things, an exciting lineup as we do all the time, every day. 6:30, we take a look at international news. And today we start off with the developments in Myanmar and Biden's response to what's happening there. Then we go over to Mars because China has launched a spacecraft. And also we'll take a look at the South China Sea and seeing what kind of military activity is going on there. And right now, though, as we are speaking, the Trump impeachment trials are going on. So we'll get some updates from that. So all of that and more at 6:30. I'm selling this super excitedly, but it's all just quite drab, really.
From Myanmar to Mars, back to the South China Sea in the US.
Yes, that's the scenic route, right? You want to get people in touch. You want to take them on the longer route because, you know, you don't want them to get bored. That's one thing.
We want them to live vicariously through us since we can't actually physically travel.
Yes. Whether they want to actually experience it is a different thing altogether. You let us know whether you enjoy this conversation. But towards the end of the hour, the local papers and portals. And in about 10 minutes, Lynn, in order to succeed in an AI world, do students need to learn the human traits of writing? An interesting title. What does it mean? We'll find out in 10 minutes.
And if you want to weigh in on these conversations, you can WhatsApp us at 01878 9899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. Up next, though, talking a little bit about some retail therapy and whether you've bought anything to make yourself feel better recently. So stay tuned. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, that was Sultans of Swing by Dire Straits, and you're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn and Roshan. Now, I'm looking at this article in front of me this morning from The Guardian, talking about the rise of emotional spending during this pandemic time. And it cites some research by Mintel, which is a London-based research firm, saying that January 2021 consumer behavior tracker saw that 53% of adults are shopping more online now than at the start of the pandemic. Another study found that Britons spent £40.6 billion online on non-essential items during lockdown. So this was back in July. So that works out to about £770 a person, mostly on takeaway food and drink, but followed by clothes and plants. And I don't know about you, Roshan, but I have found myself kind of succumbing to this urge every once in a while of just, you know, heading on to one of those shopping platforms and just buying yourself something, even if it's small, just for that little serotonin kick of having a parcel arrive some unidentifiable amount of time later, because it's like a present to yourself, which is rare, I guess, during these times now.
Yeah, there are a few factors at play, right? One is obviously the amount of time you have at home. Two, for a lot of people, yes, they've been impacted by the pandemic. They've lost their jobs. Mm-hmm. They've seen salary cuts. But there are also a lot of people who haven't seen incomes affected significantly. And on top of that, you've got now excess cash because you're not spending on the usual things like commuting, petrol, food, eating out, mm-hmm. you know, holidays, things like that. There are many people who have excess cash. And some, from a Malaysian context, I think one way to look at it is look at car expenditure towards the end of 2020. We saw an average of 56,000 cars sold in the last 6 months of the year. Yes, there were incentives, but it also shows there was cash to be used. And I've personally seen this in my life as well, with people around me and with myself, because on the expenses side, there is less, there's less outflow in general. Oh, don't forget, we had the loan moratoriums as well in the country, and many other countries in the region as well have had some version of a moratorium. So this gives a bit more excess cash for consumption, which is what the governments want, right? They want people to spend money and stimulate the economy. Now, this Guardian article very well points out that this is a form of emotional spending, and it's not an unfamiliar trait. I faced plenty of emotional spending when I, even before the pandemic, and a lot of it was work stress induced. And it really comes out in different ways, because when you're so, I guess, busy and wrapped up in work, you don't have, and you feel like you need a release. One of the easiest ways to get that done is to go online and buy something, because you feel like you've achieved something, one, but two, also it feels like a little bit of a present, as you mentioned, and also feels like a treat. But it doesn't last very long because the novelty wears off. But also beyond that, you feel guilty for making a purchase that you probably shouldn't have made. A lot of things to be wrapped up here. And obviously, very clearly, I have a lot of emotions and feelings about this.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with what you said, because a lot of the times, you know, because say, for example, my even just on a small scale, right, we are coming into the office every other week, because we here at BFM, we're on split teams. So my petrol consumption has halved. And with that extra money, it's like, what do you do, right? So a lot of people will save, and that's a good thing. But, you know, every once in a while, you also, sometimes the isolation can get to you, and mental health has suffered for a lot of people during this pandemic. And I will say, of course, you know, it has to be said that retail therapy is no accurate substitute for actually seeing somebody professional if you do need that extra help. But for a lot of people, they just enjoy that kind of momentary boost every week, every couple of weeks. Of course, it also should, you know, maybe shouldn't get out of hand. I mean, The Guardian talked to one person who's clearly kept buying online so much, he became almost a couch bargain hunter, that his neighbor, who often collected his parcels, would lean out of the window and ask, okay, so what's in today's box?
So, yeah, you know. And these are all nice and fun stories, but the real, I mean, there's also a threat of warning to be had here, right? Because credit is so easily available now. There is a fear that people could get into debt, and personal consumer debt, personal loans, credit card loans. These are very, very expensive forms of debt to take on. So be very careful, be very mindful. I know I've spent a lot of time investigative shopping online, taking a look at different things for my desk, monitors and all the such, because the government
investigative shopping.
Yeah, because the government is giving out an extended tax relief, right? Yeah. So I'm like, oh, is this an excuse to spend some money?
But also, now, you have to be realistic, right? Sometimes yes. when it comes to like, say, personal finance.
Yes. And this is why I asked this specific question to Fatin Rosalie, licensed financial planner of Wealth Vantage Advisory, a few weeks ago on Ring In Sense. You can find that on the BFM app or wherever you listen to your podcast. We talked about cash flow management, the bucket system, and ways to maybe help you fulfill that emotional spending without being irresponsible. But more importantly, today on Ring In Sense, I'll be talking about wedding planning. And this is going to be particularly important, and why it's related to this is because a lot of young couples take on debt to pay for their weddings. This is an element we're going to be exploring today. So be sure to stay all the way with us till 9:30 and listen to that.
Yes, indeed. And if you can't stay on with us until 9:30, you can always find the podcast, which will be out later today on the BFM app or on Spotify. But in the meantime, tell us what you think. You can WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. Let us know whether you've bought anything online recently to make yourself feel better. Right now, we're heading into some messages. And then after that, taking a look at the skills of writing. So stay tuned. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, that was Tame Impala with Feels Like We Only Go Backwards. And you're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn and Roshan. Now, we are looking at an article out of The Conversation this morning with an interesting title. So it's called To Succeed in an AI World, Students Must Learn the Human Traits of Writing.
Long story short, the robots are coming. Everyone run for the hills. That is the moral of this article.
Very it's Terminator happening in real life. No,
the end of days is not the Terminator sort of situation. It is robots learning to write and pretending to be us, and all, and who knows who is
and
real
robots
anymore.
Robots writing music. I think this was a thing that happened. Happened, I think, last year. A robot created a piece of jazz music.
I mean, a robot wrote an entire piece for the art for the Guardian. So things are happening. But I think the crux of this piece is basically moving away from the formulaic ways of writing, right? And learning to be more creative. Basically, the difference between a machine and a human is the human's ability to innovate and think creatively, right? And as much as people talk about AI learning to be and replacing humans, that creative element is still a very, very far reach, right? Because not only is it difficult to get there, the amount of computation power and electricity needed to generate that kind of information is very, it's still not there. It's a lot to get the same amount of thought.
Yeah, and as early as 2011, so the Institute for the Future identified social intelligence as one of the most essential skills for a future workforce. And they define social intelligence as the ability to connect to others in a deep and direct way. And that is something that it's questionable whether robots will be able to achieve, but what they can achieve is learning patterns, right? And if we think back to our student days, most of us went through, you know, English language in primary and secondary school, and you think about how you were taught to write. You were taught to write. I remember being taught to write factual essays, like, okay, here is the preamble, here is argument one, clause one, clause two, argument
correct.
Two, clause three.
And what is your thesis? What is your explanation? What's your example? And do that three times for the paragraph,
exactly.
The body of the essay. Make sure you have an introduction and the conclusion. Just bring everything together.
Rinse and
there
repeat.
Is your A.
Throw in a poem if you can.
Throw in a poem if you can. And same thing. I remember for SPM, for my Malay subject, it was that there was a formula to score your A1. At the end of the day, there's certain bombastic words you need to use, the way you structure your essay. And while that may have been useful for standardization and learning structure, robots learn structure and standardization much quicker. So the only way that humans are going to be able to keep up or keep ahead is that if we tap into our natural, creativity, the ability to think. And the ability to think is something that robots are not going to be able, AI is not going to be able to do yet, because any form of thinking that they do is based out of programming that is well programmed, right? It is within the confines. And yes, I'm sure there will be some algorithms that evolve with time, but it's not here just yet.
So the question then is, how do you hone these, you know, human, what they call the human traits of writing, right? Mm-hmm. How do you engage with an audience through the medium of the written word? This article says, you know, it gives one way in which students can do this, and that is to practice writing in which they are invested. So you choose a topic that you're really passionate about, that you hope will somehow affect change in the world. For a lot of people, maybe that's climate change. For some, it might be personal finance. And you find that thing that you are passionate about, and you learn to communicate that passion to others. That's something that AI is not yet able to do.
Yeah, I think the key here is to learn. I think that it comes down to learning not to be, quote unquote, a commodity, mm-hmm. right? Commodities, anything that is very standard with little differentiation in the product world, in the capitalistic world, is prone to commoditization. And then you're just fighting, it's just a fight to the bottom in terms of prices and how you get your, monetize your skill set. You have to create a certain, not just a brand for yourself, but a certain identity. And there will be things later on that, so maybe instead of learning how to be the best practitioner of a particular skill, learning how to be the best practitioner and then innovating on that, right? Learning how to, I think one line in this article is very powerful, is students therefore need to learn the rules and be encouraged to break them. So it's not throwing the rules out, but learning about the rules. Oh, this is the system. All right. How do we grow it? How do we expand beyond this? Because there are going to be, you know, like every revolution brought with it a certain job disruption, right? The assembly line changed the way we work. Manufacturing was done. Computers changed word processing forever. A lot of jobs are lost there. But those were very basic jobs, where people just typing down documents as opposed to adding value-added human interaction and knowledge to it. So the knowledge economy is going to become bigger and bigger. How we tap into that is going to be very important. And this is where the education system is going to be vital, because we need to start teaching kids how to think as opposed to how to mimic.
Yeah, and I think that is unfortunately a downside of a lot of our means of educating young people in this day and age, right? So there's not a lot of discussion necessarily that happens in classrooms. It is an imparting of knowledge from teacher to student, and really not the other way around. So encouraging those conversations and engagement between students with the teachers, that's something that I think is pretty vital in order to actually breed a true understanding of whatever it is that you're talking about, and also to give people confidence. Because I've had a lot of people say that, oh, you know, my English skills are not good, my skills in this language are not good enough for me to make the argument. And I don't necessarily think that that should be an impediment, right? You need to be able to make the argument. Language is secondary, and you need to be able, and you will definitely have a means to be passionate about something. It's in whatever way you feel comfortable.
Sometimes what you say is more important than how you say it.
Exactly. So let us know what you think about this. When was the last time you wrote something that you were passionate about or that you engaged with? You can let us know at over on WhatsApp at 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. We're about to head into the 6:30 news bulletin now, and here to take you there is Chic with Would You Be My Baby, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, that was Heartbreaker by The Walkmen, and you're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn Mark and Roshan Karnison. It is 6:39 in the morning, Thursday, the 11th of February, and we are taking a look at some international stories right now. First up being Myanmar, where a woman who was shot while protesting against the military coup that happened recently is reportedly in critical condition at a hospital in the country's capital of Naypyidaw. And of course, US President Joe Biden has also come out with a statement.
So very quickly on the injury here, police had used, this is a report from the BBC, that they say that police had used water cannons against the protesters who refused to retreat. And then warning shots were reportedly fired in the air before rubber bullets were fired at the crowd. But doctors cited here in this article said it appeared that live ammunition had hit protesters, and one woman suffered a serious head injury, and another demonstrator had chest injuries. The woman is now in intensive care. And although I think the terms that were used here was a projectile was lodged, and it was a metal bullet that was that the doctors found. So so this again to remind everyone, protesters are protesting against the coup that
tens
happened on February 1st, and where the military took back control of the government after, what has it been, 4 years since their election, the first election since God knows how long, since the 60s, I think. Aung San Suu Kyi is still under house arrest, which is something that the US government is asking to be rectified there. Biden has come out quite strong, I think, with a statement here. They're looking at sanctions, which is something we saw towards the end of the first military rule. I mean, towards the end of the military rule in 2011, more international governments were imposing sanctions. And some of these sanctions include assets, US assets, but that benefit the Myanmar's government, but will maintain, the US has noted that they will maintain support for healthcare, civil society groups, and other areas that Biden says are directly beneficial to the people of Myanmar, but they will announce targets of the first round of sanctions this week. This could include funding, and also we're seeing some backlash in terms of international investors pulling out. So this is obviously a story that we will continue to pursue, right, Lynn?
Absolutely. Now, the UN Human Rights Council as well, which the US has pledged to rejoin as an observer under Joe Biden, they plan to convene a special session in Geneva on Friday to discuss the human rights implications of the crisis in Myanmar. So that's something that we will be keeping a close watch on as well. Joe Biden has told the new Myanmar government, I suppose, if you can call it that, the world is watching, and that the military must relinquish the power it seized and demonstrate respect for the rule of the people of Burma. Myanmar's expects, as expressed in their November 8th election.
Yep, and this U.S. response, I guess, to the coup represents an early test of Biden's campaign promise to put human rights at the core of U.S. foreign policy, right? It's signaling that change in tone and focus, and they are definitely looking to rebuild traditional alliances in the wake of the Trump era. So this will be an interesting litmus test and testing ground for that thesis.
It will indeed. And
quite an exciting week before Anthony Blinken's first month in office, I think.
Yes, and not just that. I mean, they've also had some tensions rising in the South China Sea.
Of course.
He's also had to deal with that because Chinese military activity appears to have steadily increased in the region in recent months, according to the commander of the USS Nimitz, which has completed a 10-month deployment in the region, including a joint exercise with the USS Theodore Roosevelt. So this commander said that they're seeing a larger number of aircraft ships available to the Chinese military being utilized on a daily basis, from which they draw the conclusion that capacity has clearly increased. And this is less than 3 weeks after Joe Biden's inauguration.
Yeah, but it also, I can reflects the void that the U.S. has provided in this region, right, in the Trump era. They've been rather missing from what's going on in the region, especially the South China Sea.
From the South China Sea.
Shouldn't be a word that's difficult. It's not like my livelihood depends on being able to speak or anything. But yeah, they've provided this void here. And we've been seeing increasing tensions around borders in the sea, South China Sea, whether it comes to oil rights or fisheries or anything. There are lots of resources that are contingent on who establishes their borders where. So now that the U.S. is doing more military exercises in the region and being more outwardly focused again, this will be another interesting spot to pay attention to. Definitely more attention being paid to the Southeast Asia region now.
Yes. So this does seem to be a little bit of a return to what was the attention categorized by the Obama administration in their pivot to Asia. We'll have to see how far Joe Biden takes it. But, you know, talking about China and its exploration efforts, it has also decided to explore another different avenue, which is space.
From sea to space.
Yes, indeed. And they say that they've successfully put the Tianwen-1 mission in orbit around Mars. So this is the first time they've managed to get a spacecraft to Mars, and comes a day after, actually, the UAE accomplished the same feat. So the Tianwen-1 comprises an orbit as well as a rover, and engineers are going to be dispatching this wheeled robot to the surface, but you know they're going to be biding their time first. Expectation is that this will happen about May or June.
Yeah, and this is interesting because it just shows that the ambition of various governments to explore different avenues, right? Yes, there will always be fronts, that space. Governments are doing it. Private companies are doing it as mm-hmm. well. Jeff Bezos and Elon Musk come to mind. But coming closer to coming back to Earth just for a little bit, the Trump impeachment trials are going on and new video footage has been shown, essentially showing what happened during the Capitol riots. One video showed how Mitt Romney had to be escorted by officers out of the premises. I mean, away from danger. A lot of information is coming to light, and we will definitely be paying attention to this next week to get a roundup of what happened during the first week of the impeachment trials.
Yes, indeed. I think Donald Trump has been called by, I believe it was one senator, insider in chief.
Yes, that is definitely a term
this,
that
right?
was used.
So this is going to be certainly very interesting developments out of the US. But right now we're about to head into some messages, and then after that we're bringing you local news from the papers and portals, so stay tuned. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, that was Where Have All the Cowboys Gone by Paula Cole, and you're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn and Roshan. Now, we are looking at what's happening on the front pages of our own local papers and portals this morning. Now, I've got the New Straits Times in front of me, and their headline is one word, a very powerful lifeline. So this is talking about the reopening of businesses that happened yesterday, and they spotlighted one 80-year-old store owner whose arts and antiques shop in Penang has been hard hit. So he obviously welcomes this move with open arms. And they also did check several shopping malls, I think some of them in the Klang Valley, and found that a lot of people were flocking to these malls for some last-minute Chinese New Year shopping, which which is good for retailers and the economy. But of course, well, one must also still maintain social distancing and all the hygiene SOPs that have been put in place, because we have gotten the infections down below the 4,000 mark again. I think it was below 3,300 yesterday. So we don't want to see it increase, of course.
Yeah, I've got the Star in front of me, and their headline is Relaxing iCina Rules. And here, according to sources, have told them that the government will relax conditions for the iCina cash withdrawal facility under EPF, which is expected to be announced soon. And I think the rationale for this is that Malaysians, it's seen as a necessary move to put food on the table and help cover expenses during the pandemic. Although we have had calls with various analysts over the last few months, commenting on this, basically saying that it should be there should be some form of cash support instead of having during this very difficult time, instead of having people dip into their retirement savings and basically withdraw from their future. So it'll be interesting to see what kind of relaxation we see for the iCina rules, because there have been complaints over. I think there are more people who want it, because right now I think you need a 2 month. There needs to be like a 2 months of non-EPF payments or 30% drop in income or salary for you to be able to withdraw from iCina. But in a related news, yesterday it was confirmed that that Tengku Ali Zakri will no longer be CEO of EPF, Dato Sri Amir Hamzah Azizan will replace him effective March 1st, who is the former TNB or the outgoing TNB CEO, I guess. And this story here on the Malaysian Reserve highlights that this was a result that the changes for top posts in both TNB and EPF announced yesterday were the results of differences in company direction between top management. This is according to sources who spoke to the Malaysian Reserve. On the EPF side, the change was made as the fund was projected to record good numbers, apparently, especially on dividend payouts, which are expected towards the end of this month or early March, while at the same time, it was heavily criticized for handling the government's iCina program to allow contributors to withdraw savings. On this note, they have a quote here from Finance Minister Tengku Dato' Sri Zafrul, who acknowledged the government's awareness of complaints over iCina. His quote here is, "Your voice is heard and the improvements will be made soon." So I wonder, we're not making a direct connection between the two, but it is highly coincidental that these two pieces of news came out day after each other.
Speaking of finance ministers, though, a former finance minister and, of course, a former prime minister is currently on trial. In the 1MDB trial, it appears that there was a prosecution witness, the 11th, Tan Sri Mazidah Abdul Majid, who's a former cabinet deputy secretary general, testified that Dato' Sri Najib actually told cabinet about donations he received under Yayasan 1MDB. So he said he made formal and informal engagements with the Middle East countries, and told his ministers that the Prince Sultan, through his foundation, agreed to give more donations to Yayasan 1MDB, but that the prince requested that his contribution be kept a secret. So that is the latest news out of the 1MDB trial covered in the Star.
That is an interesting development. I wonder whether any of his members of cabinet will have to come up to rebuff said things.
But wait, there's more. it's also related. Datin Sri Rosmah Mansor's graft trial is also ongoing on, I believe it was charges of soliciting and receiving kickback. And the High Court is going to decide next week whether or not Datin Sri Rosmah will be called to enter her defence, or whether she'd be allowed to walk free over these charges. Prosecution wrapped up their case, I believe it was in December 11th last year.
Yes, and another piece of hot news that has been actually quite hot over the last week is news around Tommy Thomas's memoir titled My Story, Justice in the Wilderness. And I mean, I think there were some 300 police reports lodged against it. There have been, everyone is talking about this book, whether they love it, hate it, or don't feel any too strongly about it. Also, books are sold out. I think it would hit the Amazon top list a few days ago.
Now, it also hit the WhatsApp top list at the same time.
Yeah, that's probably not the best thing, really. That's piracy, right? Long story short, the Malaysian Bar has come out to say that while they do not have a positive view of the former Attorney General's memoir, they believe banning the book would be excessive. So that's, I guess, also a point to be noted there.
Yes. So these are all things that we will watch closely. Do let us know what you think about them. If you want to, WhatsApp us at 01878988999 or tweet us at BFM Radio. But right now, we're about to head into the 7 o'clock news bulletin. But first, here is Sam Cooke with some music for you. So stay tuned. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.